It's Sunday night at 11 p.m. It's 4 weeks before the murder. You're staring at your phone. She's late again. She's not your girlfriend, at least not in public, but you still wish that she would treat you with more respect. You pace around the small room. There's not much here except for a large bed, which sits in the middle of the room. It's layered with crisp white sheets. The room is a little cramped, but it smells fresh and new, like a large open field. You think about your own home back in town. It feels constrained, musty, diluted. It's dark there, and it's light here. You're in a small hotel room just outside of town. You live in one of those small towns where everyone knows everyone. You have to be discreet. You wait in silence. The cicadas sing softly in the distance. She's the only person that knows where you are right now. You feel completely alone. But in that solitude, you also feel a sense of empowerment. You're living a double life, and this is your favorite side. When you're on this half of your life, you feel alive. You have love, you have freedom. Anything is possible. The other side of your life, it's dark. It's stifled. You have to follow the rules there. There's a structure to your life in the town around you, and you have to fit perfectly into your place. People know you there. You have to act the part. You check your phone again. Still, nothing. You want to call her, but you're holding yourself back. You can't look weak. You need to be the one in control. That's what she likes about you. But you also can't understand why she's not here yet. She's never been this late before. Finally, you dial her number. A man answers the phone. "Hello," he says. "This is Helen's phone." He sounds out of breath. You sit silently. "If you're looking for Helen, she's currently indisposed," he laughs. You can hear Helen in the background. She's laughing too. She sounds happy. You hear some rustling, and then he hangs up the phone. Your heart falls through the ground. You know that voice. It's Daniel. You've seen Helen hanging around him before. You're in a daze. You know Helen's password to her email and social media accounts. You vowed to never use it again, but you cannot stop yourself. You log into her accounts. There it is, messages from him. They are together. You feel anger welling up in your throat. You feel as if the light side of your life is under attack. You live life as you're supposed to live. You follow the rules, you go to church, you play your role. You're good, a good moral person. Daniel is dark, he is darkness. And he is encroaching on the little bit of light that you have. You will fight back. You will defend yourself. You will defend your lover. You will kill him. Your name is, and you are a killer. It's 3.5 weeks before the murder. You're walking into your therapist's office. You've been here many times before, but it doesn't feel comfortable. It feels like you're stuck in a time loop. He greets you as usual. You sit down on an outdated couch. Your therapist has kind eyes, but he looks tired. It's like he's caught in a loop as well. The office is clean and the walls are plain. There's light beige carpet and several bookshelves, which are littered with books, pictures, and some old board games. He does not use a computer and has a whole row of metal file cabinets, which are undoubtedly filled with the town's secrets. At this moment, you are on the dark side of your life. Since last Sunday, the darkness has taken over your entire existence. You are devastated to learn about Helen and Daniel. She still has not returned your calls. Your therapist asks you to describe the last time you felt angry. You describe the feeling of being abandoned in that hotel room. Literally forgotten about and then stuck with the bill. But it's more than that. Your feelings started with abandonment, but then quickly moved to worthlessness and then helplessness. You desperately cling to the light side of your life, but it's under threat. You move around a lot. Your therapist says that's a way to avoid connecting with others, a way to avoid being seen for who you really are. You're starting to think that he may be right. After all, no one really knows you. And what if existence really is just one big collection of human awareness? By that definition, you'd barely exist. You wonder how long you can go on like this, unnoticed, unacknowledged. You can already tell that you're starting to float away, like you're on the verge of becoming a ghost. It's 2 weeks before the murder. Helen has finally agreed to meet with you. You're at a small diner next to a truck stop. The decor is generic and the dining area is busy. Waitresses bustle around carrying pots of coffee and wearing matching outfits. It's one of those diners where the menus are 5 pages long, but all of the dishes are just some variation of eggs and toast. You're angry at Helen, but you also cannot bear the thought of losing her. When she enters, you find yourself standing up to greet her. You manage a quick hug before she sits down. She clearly does not want to cause a scene. You sit across from her, trying to make sense of her expression. You've been imagining this conversation for 2 weeks now. At first, you fantasized about her falling at your feet and begging for forgiveness. You would pretend to not take her back, but after hours of begging, you'd finally agree. As time began to pass, however, you started to make little compromises in your head. Like if she gives a sincere apology, you'd be willing to consider seeing her again and work on things. Or if she wanted to talk, you'd be willing to listen. But now that she's sitting in front of you, all you want is to touch her hand. You don't care what she says. You just want to touch her one more time. Helen speaks. "I'm sorry," she says. Your heart melts into the floor. "I'm sorry too," you reply automatically. But you're not even sure what you're sorry for. Helen's demeanor is aloof, but you barely notice. You're so excited to get any glimmer of light back into your life. You ask about Daniel, the guy that picked up her phone. She says that it's over, and you believe that she's telling the truth. By the time your food arrives, you're feeling much happier. You're back to fantasizing about the day that you'll run away together. You'll leave in the middle of the night, and Helen will follow you to the next town. You'll sell her car and use the money for a deposit on a small one-bedroom apartment. You have enough savings to not work for a few months, and you know that Helen can find work easily. You'll simply disappear together. You'll be here one day, straddling the light and dark. And then you'll just take one step onto the side of light. You're so close. Helen listens to you talk and nods occasionally. Eventually, you pick up the bill. Later that week, you're checking into your appointment with your therapist. You enter his office and everything looks fresh and new. The carpet is still beige and the large metal file cabinets still loom in the corner. But you're happy to be here today. You're on the light side of life. The therapist asks about a time that you felt unappreciated. You honestly can't think of one. You know that Helen loves you and you're so close to getting the life that you want. You want to talk about your relationship with Helen and tell your therapist the good news, but you're sworn to secrecy, even in here, in this office. Neither you nor Helen can afford for this secret to get out. Instead, you talk about your day. You talk about how a higher power is guiding you and how you can read the signs that he is sending. For example, your alarm clock lost power at 10:19 last night, which corresponds to Luke 10:19, one of your favorite Bible verses. When you received your change at the gas station this morning, it was 95 cents, which corresponds to the highway that will take you out of town when it's time for you and Helen to leave. God's voice is becoming stronger, and you can hear it in almost every action that you take. When it's time to leave, your therapist finally interrupts you. He asks if you're taking your medication. You nod affirmatively. That's a lie, but God says it's okay. It's 2 days before the murder. You're staring at your phone. She is late again. The cicadas are screaming outside. All you want is some peace and quiet, but the infestation is mounting and the sound is inescapable. You're starting to feel the strong pull back into the dark side of your life. You want to love Helen so much, but you know that you cannot keep up this back and forth. You fantasize about her begging for forgiveness. You even say a prayer. The door opens. Helen enters. But she's not apologetic. She is angry. Helen throws her phone on the hotel bed. 100 text messages, she yells. You're stunned. You've sent me 100 text messages, she repeats. I can't do this anymore. Your obsession and control, it's too much. You've been following me too, she says. I know that it's you. You feel a rush of pain. But it's true. It's all true. You've called and texted Helen obsessively since that day you met at the diner. You followed her. You even saw it when she went back to his condo. You know how many times she went there and what time she left. You can't stop, though. Helen is your light, and God is telling you to go to the light. You move towards her, but she pushes you away. You fall back onto the bed. You try to sit up, but now she's sitting on top of you. It's over, she screams. How many times do I have to tell you it's over? You stare blankly. You long for her touch. She jumps up and grabs her phone. It's only when she slams the door on her way out that you feel the darkness coming. But this time it's not black, it's red. It's Sunday afternoon, the day of the murder. The cicada swarm is at its worst, and it's been more difficult than usual to maintain your daily charade. Ever since the last time you saw Helen, you've not been able to concentrate. She was such a sweet and loyal companion until Daniel got a hold of her. All of this is his fault. When you woke up today, you felt different, though. You felt a renewal of energy. Your concentration has returned, and you're ready to take back what's yours. You've been watching him. You know that he spends Sunday afternoons alone. You drive to his apartment in broad daylight, and you can feel that God is with you. You see his car in the parking lot. You park right next to it and put on a pair of rubber gloves. When you try the front door, it's locked. It's okay, though. You're prepared for this. You pull a screwdriver out of your coat pocket and quietly break the lock. You know just where to apply the pressure to cause minimal damage. As you enter the apartment, music is playing. He never hears you coming. You grab him from behind, gag him with a chloroform-soaked rag, and then drag him into the bedroom. He's unconscious from the chloroform. You tie him down with loose restraints just in case. You scan the room and then you see it. His insulin case. What a perfect idea, you think. God does have a plan for everyone. You open a new syringe and inject more than enough insulin to induce a coma. His breath is shallow, but you're sure that he will not be getting up. You work quickly to untie the restraints. You dress him in a pair of pajamas and then tuck him into bed. You look at his pale face. You would like him to suffer more, but you accept this is God's plan. You stuff the chloroform rag into your pocket and make a small repair to the lock on your way out. You walk slowly to your car. You feel uplifted, lighter somehow. You smile for the first time in a long time.
In this dark night, it's too hard for me to say now if the rays of hope will shine again someday.
You have been listening to Ghost Story, a podcast brought to you by Cold Plunge Studios. If you enjoyed this episode, hit the subscribe button on the podcast player of your choice. For more content, visit us at ghoststorypodcast.com. And finally, thank you for listening.
Drifting once more. Will these clouds ever lift and the map again reveal? At this point, it's just too dark to tell. If these green night blues would lighten up, if my nature would shake this wicked spell, if this midnight sky would brighten up. My ears.